dreams don't glue. Ed and Matt, they're the burnout kings. Welcome back to the Blackboard of Broken Dreams, the only podcast brave enough to say what every teacher is thinking but doesn't want on a write-up.
Today's episode is brought to you by bourbon, passive aggression, and that one admin who emails you at 4:57 p.m. on a Friday.
We already roasted our fellow teachers in part one, so now it's time to shine a warm, unflattering fluorescent light on admin and students.
Because what's a school without a walkie-talkie micromanager and a kid who thinks your class is optional?
So sharpen your sarcasm like it's a number two pencil. This is Stereotypes, part two. And yes, someone will be offended. Boop!
Disclaimer, the following episode contains teacher stereotypes, student call-outs, and light administrative slander.
All characters are fictional unless they sound exactly like someone you work with. In that case, we don't know them, and this podcast is a coincidence.
No feelings were harmed in the making of this episode, but some egos might be.
Please consult your union rep before filing any complaints. And remember, if the shoe fits, it probably belongs in the lost and found with Kyle's vape.
Let's get into it before the PA system interrupts again.
All right. So what are we talking about? Admin?
Admin. Let's roast them. This is not a roast. We love you. You employ us.
Yeah. We're not the roasting type.
Unless it's, a rotisserie chicken, perhaps, or potatoes.
I would not mind that. Not going to lie. So let's talk about it. So what do you think are some of our admin stereotypes?
Well, we've got a few, as I alluded to in the earlier opener from part one, we have the one who likes to read the Facebook.
Okay.
Feed aloud in the entire faculty meeting, or at least spend, a handful of time on it.
Okay. So they're into technology.
They're into technology and they're into hearing themselves.
Okay, perfect.
And that probably falls into the PA diva.
The PA diva, yes. I've definitely encountered one or two of those.
And then we've got other ones. We've got the data guys, and we've got the pep talk machines out there as well.
All right. How about the walkthrough lurker?
Oh, gosh, not the walkthrough lurker. Don't mind me. I'm just going to pop in real quick. It's the pop-in.
Yeah, and you see them walk by, and you're like, oh, God, please don't stop in. Oh, man, they're stopping in.
Now, I don't know. Now, we've changed schools, and I can't remember this from when I was there, but I don't think we did this. But where I'm at now, they will notify other people on the floor with a sign.
A sign?
Yeah, there's a way they do this.
Like, what do you mean by a sign? Like, is it like a smoke signal? Or
it's almost like a smoke signal.
Okay.
So we have wings, kind of like where we were before, when we were together. And what would happen is as soon as the admin left your room, you would call the next teacher down the line.
Okay.
And you'd make a noise.
Boop!
Caw-caw! And hang up.
All right, that's interesting.
And that happens, and I was like, I have no idea what you're talking about. And somebody was telling me this, because somebody walked by, and they saw me, and they just went, caw-caw! I was another teacher, and I was like, what just happened? See, I had no clue.
That's crazy to me, because I think if someone did that to me, I'd be like, are you okay today?
Yeah, and then they proceeded to afterwards tell me, like, oh, just so you're aware, this is what we do, so we know that there are, admin on our floor.
So it's kind of like when you're driving your car and someone flashes their lights heading
bingo
at you.
Oh, okay. Cop ahead,
look out.
Isn't that kind of them?
It's very kind, but at the same time, I would just think if someone called my room and cacawed at me, I'd be like, oh, that's just a student prank calling me.
Exactly.
So, I mean, they should definitely make that more clear when you get hired. Like, first faculty meeting, be like, hey, just so you know, if someone cacaws at you.
That'd be great if they did that in a faculty meeting.
Yeah.
I think that should be a PD.
It might have to be.
Professional development.
What noises can you make?
So that you could communicate without actually communicating.
Yeah. It's very interesting. I never heard of that before.
Neither have I. This is all new, but I figured this is a fun one to share.
That is, it's very interesting, especially for like a walkthrough lurker where...
And that's what it's for. It's for the pop-ins. It's for the walkthrough lurkers.
Oh, yeah, because you got people who like make it they're like, I have to hit 30 classrooms this month. It's going to happen.
And they will make it happen.
Yeah.
They're diligent.
Yeah, because if they don't, like they're not hitting their quota that they want.
Kind of like if you're driving your car and they flash the lights, they want their quotas.
Now, do you flash your lights when you're driving if you pass a cop?
Absolutely not, because I would just keep my brights on and really set people up. Yeah, it wouldn't work. Or I would just shut my headlights off and be like, oh, it's a little really dark out here.
Oh, my gosh. No, I am the guy who flashes.
You are?
Oh, yeah. Now, I don't do it to everybody, but if it's like a sports car or somebody who's clearly speeding, I give them a little heads up.
I forgot you're a car guy, so you can tell by the headlights probably. Oh, yeah, that's a fellow sports car driver.
I can. Or if they're driving ridiculously fast, I'm like, oh, sometimes I don't flash them. Like, oh, you deserve it.
Fair enough. All right, so getting back into this, I mean, do we hit all of our admin stereotypes?
Well, what about the data guy or gal?
I mean, there definitely are some data people. How about, the vibe checker, making sure you're okay?
Are you all right? Do you need anything?
Yeah, can I help in any way?
Yeah, it's a trap. Don't do it.
And then the opposite, the power-hungry person.
Oh. Well, there's something because they're grasping straws to become a future leader of public education.
It's very competitive.
It's super competitive. I would never want it.
Me neither. So I'm glad we're both in the same
boat. I don't want it. You know, at one point in time, I thought I did want it. I was like, you know what I should do? I should become admin. The money's great.
Yeah, I think all of us at one point think we can affect change and be like, this is what we want to do. Like, I love education so much. You know what? I can effectively change things I don't like about this school or this district or just about schools in general.
That's so positive of you. I was in it for the money.
Oh. I mean, that's a perk, I guess. But now that you mention it, it's probably mostly the money that I would care
about.
I
mean, why does anybody else move up to admin?
I mean, for the effect of change that they can make.
Are they making any change? I mean, you got to be at the top to make change. And even then, it's dictated by your state.
True. I mean,
or your school committee board or whoever.
You know, the optimist in me thinks if I took that admin job, maybe I could go and make my way into, making new policies that help our school.
Oh, like the policies that have already been done 15 times with a new name?
That happens, I'm sure. I mean, being in schools 15 years, you've seen things come around before.
That's it. I mean, we can regroup. It's called recycling.
Yeah. What do you think about these stereotypes, though? So if we're talking about the PA diva, what are we looking for?
Well, I think they love to hear themselves talk. They will ramble. They will go on and embellish stories. They talk way too much, kind of like we do sometimes. You know, they're people who like to hear themselves.
Yeah, and I don't know if we're necessarily the people who like to hear themselves, but we like to be heard.
Oh, I like to hear myself.
Oh, I like to be heard.
That's way better.
That's why I like doing this, because it's I hope someone hears me.
Well, I mean, I joke, we jest, I do hope that people take this with a grain of, fine Himalayan pink salt.
When you spend, your days teaching adolescents who don't necessarily listen to what you have to say, and you feel like you're talking to the void. Am I doing that right now, though?
Maybe I should get a sip. Can I use the bathroom?
This is what it feels like, right? So I'm like, I'm hoping somebody listens and they go, I got you. I hear you. You are seen. This is okay.
Yeah, this is normal.
Yeah.
I was watching, I won't go down that wormhole, but there's been things that have been popping up on my social media feeds that are hilarious, and then at some point we'll have to go down there. One of them was a principal, and he did a then versus now, and I was like, that would be a perfect thing for this episode. And I don't know who this person was. He was on the TikTok, so the Facebook reel, YouTube short thing. I don't even remember where I saw it.
I think I seen that same exact video.
It was an old dude. I say he's old because he had gray hair. He was probably only 32.
Yeah, and he had stubble.
Yeah, he had the scruff, the stubble.
Yeah, I know exactly the same guy.
And he was doing the then versus now. And I'm sitting there in my mind, I'm going, oh, yes, we've had that. Over the years, and we've actually watched one of our former leaders in the building, I think, go through that transition almost. And I remember some years where we were, they're like, the weather's nice today, faculty meeting canceled. And we're like clapping in the background, like, yes, I love this guy. He's my hero. I hope he never leaves.
I think I saw that same exact video, which is funny because you and I aren't really social media guys. So no, it's like
but I stopped for a half a second.
I did too. And I was like, oh, wait, let's see, you know, especially, you know, having these conversations mm-hmm. and knowing we were going to talk. I was like, let me see this video. And I was like, oh, interesting.
You know, maybe one of these days we'll do an episode where we analyze and comment on the social media. I don't know, the short form factor. Stuff.
Maybe.
I don't know what you call it.
I don't know.
I don't do it.
The socials, we'll call it.
Yeah, the socials. The Tic Tac videos, the Minty Fresh ones.
I mean, going along with the then and now, trying to be, like, more positive.
Yeah.
How about the pep talk admin, you know? The one who's like, you're doing a great job, you know, this is what you're doing well, but you should maybe do this because I think kids would really get a lot out of it, blah, blah, blah.
They do the sandwich.
Yes.
They do the constructive criticism sandwich. You know, they put a compliment on either side. Usually it's just in the front. It's more like toast with some jam on it. Well, the jam is everything you're doing wrong. Let me jam it down your throat.
I know as a general ed teacher, when it comes to like meetings for IEPs and 504s and special ed and stuff, we get told that you should start with a couple positives. And I feel like the, you know, the pep talk admin, that's where they really rely on. They go, hey, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to start with some positives first.
You know, I think a better tactic for these pep talker people would be to just do the pep talk and then walk away. Don't pep talk and then bring me down.
Yeah.
Pep talk. You see me in passing, doing a great job. Keep it up. Oh, I really like this guy. And then you see him again. It's like, hey, I need you to do something. Could you look into this, et cetera, whatever it is. But you've had all these build-ups to that point. And then I feel like the response you're going to get from your, you know, peons or peasants below you are going to be better.
You don't like to be built up just to be brought down?
No, I know the game.
I'm in the
same boat. It all the time. You do it with the students. Hey, you're doing a great job. It's all wrong.
You know, you could do this better.
You could try studying more than the 30 seconds before the test, but I appreciate you studying 30 seconds before the test.
Mr. What's studying?
Well, I don't even know at this point.
Yeah.
I looked at the stuff.
I agree with you. And then, like, going in the opposite respect, you talked about data. Then you have those admins who are just like, the data says.
You know, and they need that hard, real-world crutch. And I love numbers. We both love numbers.
I love numbers, but you know one area of math that I don't like very much?
It's probably statistics.
100%. Because you always are like, well, who did the research on this?
You can make statistics say whatever you want. In fact, 95% of statistics are made up on the spot.
I would imagine so. I mean, you got to look at stuff. Like you hear medicines, and it's like, well, who did the research on this? Oh, there's no side effects? I bet you there's no side effects, right? Oh, the company who's selling the medicine did the research? Oh, makes a lot of sense.
Independent through our shell company.
Yeah.
Definitely not connected to us in any way.
So, I don't know. You can skew data a lot of ways, and that's why, for me, I'm not a big stats guy. It just never been. Now, like, probability I like. But when it comes to statistics, there's just too many variables that are sometimes unaccounted for.
You like probability because you like to gamble because you're poor.
Well,
you're
a
teacher.
I got to make it somehow, okay? You know? And I'm not going to get rich doing my day job.
No, definitely not.
So every now and then, you just got to be like, you know what?
Yep.
I'm going to take the risk and see what happens.
That's it. You're not going to win unless you play.
Yeah, I've seen lottery dream homes, you know?
I know.
People do win.
That could be me.
Gosh, if only I was lucky enough.
You know, a little side story based off of, you know, that whole probability and statistics thing. Remember the old fortune tellers you would fold up and the kids did it in elementary school? You probably did it. It looked like a little bird eating thing that would open.
Pick a number, pick a color.
Yeah. And they'd be like, you know, you pick 3, 1, 2, 3. And they'd, you know, move the piece of paper back and forth. Well, we were out to dinner tonight with my kids. And, of course, they don't know how to fold it because they haven't learned anything in school. And they're elementary, and they should know that stuff by now. Like, that should be a lesson. I don't know how they don't know how to make a paper football or a fortune teller.
There's probably an app for it.
There probably is, but my kids don't have phones. They wouldn't know what it is, but they didn't know how to make it. So, anyway, I folded them for them. I remembered how to do it. You know, it had been probably since I was in elementary school that I've made one. And we were doing it. And of course, you know, everybody asks the question, am I going to be a billionaire? Those are the kids' questions. And of course, we do it, and he does it, and he's like, he gets it, yes! And I'm like, oh, lucky bastard. And then I do it. He goes, I'm like, will I be wealthy someday? And we, you know, we do it, you know, pick a color. I'm like, blue, B-L-U-E. And he goes, pick a number, three. He's like, one, two, three. And he goes, pick another number. I'm like, I don't know, two. Fold it up. It's like, no. I'm like, are you kidding me? I go, this always happens. Every time, it's a no. It's not even like a maybe.
I mean, you wonder why. Like, look at the job you chose.
Well, I'm an idiot. We've talked about this.
Yeah. I mean, can I make a confession right now?
Yeah, do it. This is great.
I don't know how to fold one of those.
Are you kidding me?
I've played with those before, sure, but I've never been one to initiate the be like, pick a number. I'm not that guy. I never did it. Paper football? I got it.
Paper football, yeah.
It just,
wow, really?
The fortune teller, because I knew it was all a sham. I just was like, well, this is just, if you can count the number of letters, you can figure this stuff out pretty good.
Well, I'm just saying it pretty much tells the truth. And I will probably never be wealthy.
You never know.
Well, I want to prove it wrong.
I hope you do one day.
Of course, my own son's gloating that he's going to be a billionaire. And I'm like, ugh, jerk.
I can picture him doing that.
He could. Anyway, so this is data, you know, and this is why we, like, don't, do we care? Do we like the data guy? The data guy is usually a very nice guy, but they sometimes harp on that. I mean, we've had a couple different data people roll through our lives, and I've had data people where I'm at, and I don't mind data because I love arguing sometimes against it or for it. And, I mean, grad school was all data-based research, and they want data-based practices and everything. Everything data, 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 data.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat, and, like, we've definitely seen our share of, but, I mean, most schools are run by data. Like, that's how you get rated for most school districts and everything else.
That's all the federal government cares about.
Is the data. So it's, I understand it, but at the same time, like, I love it when it's used for, like, scheduling students. And you're like, yes, the data shows that they should be in this area and doing well. But what's actually happening?
They don't want to do it.
We've had those conversations times when we co-taught where it's like, this kid should, well, I mean, it's happened both ways. Yeah. Where it's like, this kid should not be here.
But they're up.
Yeah. But then this kid should be here. And it's like, oh, well, should they though? Because like their scores are good because they're doing well in our class. But data shows they should be higher up, right?
Right. We've had the ones that should be higher up and the ones who should be lower down. And they do the whole push. Remember there was that push initiative that they did, they're like, oh, I have an idea. Kids will rise to the occasion.
Yes.
And I went, some will.
And we'll get into that when we talk about students for sure. But it's one of those things that, like, there's too many variables within the data that you can't always be like, yeah, this is what we have to live by.
Yep. Oh, gosh.
I just don't like it.
Well, you know, to all the data-driven admin listening to this, thanks.
We appreciate all your effort into looking into the numbers.
Just know that for every data point you found, 10 of your math teachers have already argued against every single data and are questioning all your practices. And did you get a proper baseline?
Yes, that's important. You need to have a control, right?
They do. They need. Yeah. And
where is that control happening?
But, you know, maybe they fall into, you know, some sort of a, you know, they want to make that change. And I think that's what they're going for. They want to make that change. Like anybody who goes into admin besides the paycheck, they want to make a change.
And we talked, that's, for me, that's one reason why I considered admin. The pay would have been a bonus. But like, I truly care about, you know, the city I live in and everything else like that, that I want to make it an effective school, and I want my kids to do well, and I want kids to be successful.
And we've had some great turnarounds there while I was there.
And we have, and like we've seen it, even with the kids who were improperly placed with data, we're like, we can make this happen.
Yeah, and we did. I personally think we were very successful together.
But does everybody? Who knows?
It's all
subjective, right?
It is time for a change. Anyway, moving on, after we appreciate our admin and we know the ones who like to hear themselves talk, we got the divas, we have the... You know, the people who love to check in with us and, you know, we didn't talk about The micromanagers.
So the power hungry, would that fall in that? I briefly mentioned it, but
okay.
Those are tough ones to deal with sometimes.
The first tell of a person who's a micromanager, and I'm watching this happen with my own wife, is they will tell you, they come in, they're in charge, they just took over something, and they're like, I want you to know that I'm going to leave you alone and I'm not a micromanager. BS. Like, yeah. Flat out. Like, if anybody tells you that they're not a micromanager, oh, they definitely are.
The fact that they use the term micromanager means that someone's called them that or insinuated that they were. So it's on their brain when they're talking.
That's definitely not me. I would never tell you what to do. By the way, did you check this and that and this and that? Don't forget to do this. It's not due for 30 days.
Yeah, or they come in, they're like, yeah, you do it your way, but my way's better.
Yeah, about that.
You know, like, I taught for 3 years, okay? I've seen a few things, and it's like, I bet you have.
That's a stereotype right there. The admin who have spent more year in admin than they have in the classroom.
The ladder climber.
Oh, the ladder climber. It's like, what? I know. Well, you know, there's the jokes of, like, those who can't do teach, and those who can't teach become admin?
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, that could be a new tagline. I like that.
That's it.
Yeah, but, like, those are the tough ones. Like, when you have someone telling you how to teach and run a classroom, and they've only done it a few years, you're like,
that's hard.
Yeah.
Well, they know all the best practices because they read a book.
Yeah, that, you know, and books are always.
And they love these people. They, you know, I've come across admin who have read these books from these authors, and they just fall in love. They're enamored with what they're saying and everything that they're about. And then I hear it and I process it and I try really hard to not say anything, and I don't say anything to them. I just, like, go behind their back, and I'm like, this guy's an idiot. What's he thinking? That's not how this works. That's not how any of this works.
Oh, yeah. I've met the people who live by what a book says, and you're like, are you sponsored by this author?
Are you getting commissioned?
Because sometimes it feels that way, right?
I think they're getting commissioned.
They might. I mean, you know, being a teacher, being an admin, even still working in schools as an admin, like, you probably should get more money than what you get paid, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
For what you deal with, especially, like, dealing with discipline, like, that is the number one thing that I would not want to deal with on a daily basis as an admin. So, like, I truly appreciate my admin, and I definitely feel supported and all that stuff. But, like, it's tough. It's a tough job.
Yeah, no, I will say, for all the admin out there that are listening, I will say almost all of you have been very supportive of anything that we've encountered as teachers. Now, there's a couple out there, exchanges that have been gone in our, you know, in the way I would have liked them to go.
Yeah, but, I mean,
but for almost all of them, they're great.
Yeah, because even as a teacher, I'm sure there's students who've had me who are like, yeah, you were good, but there's things that I don't like that you did, and I truly get that, because, I mean, you know, you have, you know, 100 to 150 to 200 kids. I don't know how many kids you have, but, like,
yeah,
you have
it's a lot.
It's a lot of personalities that might not click with you, and that's okay.
Yeah.
But, like, for admin, like, I truly do appreciate them. It's not an easy job. So, like, you know, definitely give grace where it's due.
Yeah, no, and I, you know what I'm also thankful for is the admin. You know, Matt, when you've had admin who have done evaluations and you're like, they were hardly here, but you get a decent evaluation and you're like, I'll take it. They're not ripping me apart.
And sometimes I'm like, they must be a vibe checker. They can see the kids in the room. They understand it. They're like, the kids seem like they like them. Oh, yeah, you know, Mr. Hermetics, he reaches these kids. He walks around and circulates. It's like, all right, he knows what he's doing.
I had a situation where I totally forgot to do some of my stuff for my evaluation.
That's tough.
The admin was supportive. And I was like, all right. And they called me up on the phone. This is the last day of school. And they're like, hey, you need to put such and such into your evaluation. And I'm like, now, of course, I did remember on my way into work that day, and I was like, I'm not going to do it. Yeah. I go, what's going to happen? Nothing. well, I didn't do it. And they called me out on it.
So something did happen?
Yeah, they were like, you know, the phone rings. And, of course, it's my supervisor's coming up on the caller ID, but it's somebody else who's showing up, who's talking to me. And I'm like, oh, no, I'm going to get fired, because this is, you know, they're doing the whole round of like, we're doing a reduction in force. I'm like, yeah, okay. So they're doing this and they're like, oh, you know, it's a good thing I like you, Mr. Plan, because if you could just go put this stuff in, you'll be good. Just copy it over from what you did in the middle of the year. Good thing I like you. Thanks, buddy. And I'm like, all right, I'll take care of it right away. Of course, I send the email over. They're like, hey, I did it. And then I run into my direct supervisor in the hallway. And I'm like, hey, I emailed you. And they're like, yep, I saw it. Thanks for doing that thing. I appreciate it. There's like straight code. Because, you know, for my evaluation, you're supposed to be observed. It never happened.
Oh, I've been there before.
And I'm just like, I saw them, but I didn't want to put anything in writing. Because sometimes I'm like, well, you know, let's not write this down. I reach out, and I see them in the break room, and I'm like, hey, supervisor person, just want to let you know, we were supposed to do our observation today, you forgot to come in. And they're like, how did you do? I go, obviously I did spectacular, it was great. And they were like, excellent, thank you very much. And they walked away, and I'm like, should we reschedule?
I can just picture this, and I'm kind of sad I wasn't, like, there to observe this.
Well, one of my colleagues was, not a co-teacher, but a colleague was there, and he's just shaking his head. He's like, Mr. Plan, you're a flipping idiot.
Oh, I could just picture you being red as could be, just sweating on the forehead, just like wiping it off. I did that thing. I sent you that email. Are we good to go?
Yeah, well, you know, because I had changed, I'm within this time period of like, you can be let go without cause. And I'm like, oh, I don't want that to be it. But of course, I'm like, oh, they never showed up. But of course, once you sign off on it, it's too late. But he was like, you're an idiot. They're letting you go without having to do it. I was like, yeah, but you see, I'm within my window of, you can be like, I just want to make sure everything's good. They're like, you're good. I was like, okay.
I would have done the same thing. I'd have been apologetic, being like, I'm so sorry, right. I lost track of time.
So they're like, well, you can email, you know, the person's like, you can email me and we can reschedule. And I was like, I can, but I'm not gonna.
Smart move.
And I didn't, and it never happened.
Yeah.
And it, you know what? It worked out. At least I haven't been fired yet.
It's always nice with the understandable admin, right?
It was. And I think, you know, I think some admin, and I'm going to say, these are the admin stereotypes that I like. If you don't make a wave, they got no problem with you. You do your job, you come into work, you know, people aren't complaining about you. You know, minimal stuff like, oh, he's making me do my homework. You know, whatever. They're going to just let you go.
Yeah, I'm a fan of that, too.
I like that. Let me do my job.
The laissez-faire attitude, right?
The non-micromanager.
Yeah, see? And I also respect the admin who was a teacher for a long time. They just got into it, but they still haven't lost their teacher roots.
Right.
Because you get it both ways. You either get the admin who doesn't lose the teacher roots, who be like, I get it. I ran a classroom. I understand behaviors are tough, blah, blah, blah.
That's why I left.
Yeah, or you get the admin who was like a teacher last year, and they're like, yeah, but now I'm your boss.
Oh.
And you're like, yes, I know
that. Did they hike up their belt when they said that?
Yeah, I mean, you can't see me right now, but yes, I
hiked
up that belt.
Did they push up their brow when they said that?
I was like, yeah, you know, yes, I understand teaching's tough, but they don't really empathize with you. And I love the empathy of like understanding how it is. Because things have since I first started, things have definitely changed. So like even 2 years from now, 3 years from now, who knows what it's going to be like. And I like when people stick to that and understand how things are. It's not easy controlling, you know, 30 plus kids in a classroom.
No, no. And tip for future contracts, if you can figure it out, if you have a union who will fight for you, put a cap on that classroom number.
Yeah.
That is a negotiating tactic for people.
Yeah, and for people listening, like, I'm assuming most people listen who are teachers, but if you're not a teacher, just think of, like, having four kids by yourself. And, like, we'll do, like, toddler age to, like, like early adolescence.
Go coach kindergartners.
Yeah, yeah, just, any, like,
sport.
Think about them on their wildest day and how to control them.
Yep.
That's teaching, but with, you know, 26 more or more than 26 more.
26, 30. I know there's teachers out there who've got more than 30. I've known people. I've had more than 30. I did not like it.
Yeah, it's tough. But, like, just to give that perspective, like, just to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you can't control people, right?
No. Well, we think we can.
Yeah, you do your best to kind of, like, you know, coerce them to be like, hey, you should do this because you'll get a good grade. And then they're like,
then what?
Yeah, then it's like, for what?
Yeah, and that leads us to our student stereotypes.
Yeah, because they're like, we've encountered quite a few. I know personally, yeah. I've encountered quite a few. And I know together, we have almost every type under the sun, right?
Yeah, and we're going to miss some. So if we miss one, and we will undoubtedly will, let us know which one you love or despise the most, and we'll totally bring it up in a future episode. So let's just start off with the ball running.
Okay, I like where you're going with that.
We'll go with the jock.
The jock. I mean, every movie you've ever seen about school, who's there? The jock, right?
Jock, I need to, Mr. Hematix, can I go to the trainer? I need to pass to the trainer. Pulled a hammy.
Yeah.
And I was lifting the vending machine because I was hungry.
Yeah, and, like, you know, going into teaching, I saw the jock, and I was like, going to expect to see, you know, the jock stereotype. But it's funny because, like, some of the jocks I have in class are also some of my best students because they want to play their sport.
I have had both jocks. I've had the dumb jock and the smart jock.
Yeah, it's a wide variety even within that
realm.
Correct.
I mean, some are just gifted athletically and academically, and then some are just gifted athletically.
Yeah.
And some just think they're gifted athletically.
Yeah, and then the jock, you know, I love it when you find out that they're like, yeah, I play varsity this, varsity that. And then you find out that they sit the bench.
Varsity bench warmer is what they are.
And then they always challenge you to, like, a physical activity. I bet you I can.
How much can you bench?
Yeah. That's the go-to is
Mr.
lifting
Maddox,
weights.
Mr. Maddox, can you bench 220? I don't even know. Is that a good number?
It's like, bench? I don't. What does that mean?
How many benches is that?
So it's always fun. Like, I do respect the jock stereotype because you do see it to a certain extent, but it's not like it is in the movies, right?
Sometimes they think they're real cool.
Yeah.
Sometimes they've got varsity jackets.
I've seen the varsity jackets. That one's always classic.
That comes and goes in waves. Like, sometimes they're popular some years, and then other years they're not.
I feel like they're less popular as we've moved on in our careers.
Yeah, I think what we need now is a new hit TV show, like High School Musical or something, to come back and bring back in varsity jackets. And it could be regional, too. So maybe down in other, like, really big football areas or something where they're wearing varsity jackets, maybe it is still popular. I don't know.
I'm sure it is. But I know that, like, for me personally, like, you see it every now and then, but it's not as prevalent as you, like, see in the movies where there's, like, a group of 20 kids wearing their varsity jackets.
But we all resonate with that.
We do.
That imagery is on point. And then opposite the jock.
Where are you going? You going with the stoner? Maybe who's at the field but underneath the bleachers?
Yeah, probably.
Who, like, knows the outcome of the game, but...
But they don't smoke joints anymore.
No, it's vapes, right?
They're all vaping.
Yeah.
Vaping. They're going to redo the song Smoking in the Boys' Room to be Vaping in the Boys' Room.
Yeah.
I can't wait for that rendition to come out.
It would be an interesting song, for sure.
It pretty much wouldn't. It wouldn't change much. It'd just be, like, from smoking to vaping and, like, something about cartridges and charging.
Yeah. I feel like it's a lot of work to keep up with that, but I don't know. I've never dabbled in that world.
So no, neither have I. But so the stoners that I've had, I've had some really mellow ones who just sometimes will spew out really philosophical stuff.
I've seen that, yeah.
and they're failing your class. But you don't want them to fail because you're like, dude, you're so deep, man. But they can't get it on paper, and you can't collect it and put a grade on it. But deep down, you know they've solved for X.
Yeah, and most of the stoner kids I've had, I mean, they're likable students.
Yeah, most of them.
It's just the motivation is not
Yeah, I've had some. So I've had the, you know, and then, again, some of these stereotypes will cross. Like, I've had the one that comes to mind from this previous year is a stoner-jock combo, but they weren't really that good as the jock, but thought they were, and then said the most weird things all the time. And then you would say something, and they'd always come back with one dumb phrase. And that was how they responded to everything. Now, I remember doing this in middle school. My dumb phrase in middle school, eighth grade, with my friend and I, we would say, perhaps, to everything anybody said. Hey, can you do this? Perhaps. It drove my mother crazy. I thought it was hilarious. Now I know what these kids are up to.
You know what I'm going to say to you from now on when you ask, like, hey, we're going to get together and maybe record it?
Perhaps. And that's exactly what we would say to each other. It was hilarious. My mother got so annoyed. And this kid that I had, he would say, I hope. I'm like, what do you mean, I hope? You hope what? What are you hoping for? Are you hoping for something? He's like, I hope.
See, like, I didn't.
Oh, God, here we go again.
I didn't do the perhaps. I was always the maybe. If you get a maybe from me, it most likely means
that's
like,
a no.
That's no. That's a and no. I'm too nice to be like, no.
No, I'm not doing
so
that.
So I'm like, yeah, maybe.
I'm going to let you down lightly.
Yeah. Going along with stoner, I feel like these kind of might go hand in hand. How about a gamer?
Yeah, I mean, they're probably high on energy drinks and maybe also stoned or doing both simultaneously to offset things with their...
If they have a free hand, depending on what they're playing, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's either covered in Cheeto dust or Dorito dust and, you know, and they're saying, you know, it's hilarious because I've actually had this happen where they've done something in class that was like a competition or worksheet or something. And they said to me, GG. And I was like, say what? They're like, GG, Mr. Plan. I'm like, all right. And I'm like, well, you know what? I was a gamer, but I never thought it out in my head as GG. I always read it as good game. And that's what we was. It was GG was good game. But to hear it with the younger generations just saying the letters, I was like, oh, gosh.
See, it's funny because, like, good game for me was always – like jocks that I do, like you play one-on-one in basketball. It was always at the end. Good game.
Good game. Yeah. 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 I mean, you know, to go back way down the wormhole, because even my students are like, Mr. Plan, are you a gamer? I'm like, well, I used to be. And they're like, well, what did you play? Did you play Fortnite? I go, no. And then they're
I
like,
I was teaching during yeah. those days.
And they're like, did you play Call of Duty? And I'm like, older than that. You know, it was back to the Counter-Strike and the Team Fortress and Half-Life days and Quake and, you know the turning point of LAN parties. Now I'm dating myself and saying how old I am. Yes. But that's where I remember saying GG, and I was always like, in my head, I'm like, oh, they just said good game. It was a good match. But I didn't ever thought people would say that exactly like that. It's like when people would say LOL in public.
Yeah.
LOL!
Instead of just laughing out loud.
we're here together. You could have just laughed.
Yeah, but
GG.
You know, LOL sounds perfect.
BRB.
I've done the BRB before. So don't judge me, okay?
Lol.
And you must resonate with gamers, though, saying
I do. I get along with them so well. I mean, and as soon as I can, you know, once I find out that connection with them, I will go ahead and, you know, divulge that little tidbit of information. You know, connecting with the students is what it's all about. But just that much, like no more, nothing else. Like, oh yeah, I played video games once in my time. It was Mario. And they're like, oh my gosh, you're a gamer. I'm like, yeah, I love video games. You know, that type of thing. That's it. Yeah, that's all you need.
But unfortunately, as you become an adult, it's harder to find the time to play those video games.
I think I buy them and then look at them and don't play them.
I've been there. There's only certain ones that, like, I'll go back to just because you're like, I just need to go off into this other world
yeah.
where I can play a game and just like not have to worry about anything.
Yeah, no, that's why adults play video games. It's to escape the reality. I mean, the same reason people read books, right? It's to escape the reality, to enjoy something. Video games are the same thing.
It's for people who don't like to read, is what you're saying?
No, that's Instagram.
Oh, okay. All right, so let's keep going with these. Okay, so we talked about the jock, we talked about the stoner, gamer. How about we start talking about, like, a little bit with academics, right?
Okay.
How about, like, the smart, lazy kid who you know is bright and is just like, I don't need this.
So they haven't turned a single thing in, but they caught my mistake on the board?
Yeah, maybe, but they still might turn work in, but they do the just enough to get by.
I hate that. Drives me bonkers.
Me too. And even when I was in school, like, I've had friends who I know are brighter than me.
Yeah.
And you'd see their grades come back and you're like, you got the, what? Is that a 65 in the class? And you're like, how do you have a 60? You're smarter than me. What are you doing?
Like,
and
it's I don't
just,
care.
Yeah. They're just like, yeah, I'm just getting through.
Yeah. Doesn't matter. They're not motivated by grades.
Yeah. And like, I've had so many of those and like, those are the ones that like, are on my radar all the time because I want them to do better because you know they can do better.
I've had some students who do really well in the class that everyone else is failing. They're pulling off, you know, 90%+ in a class that all my other students are bombing or lucky to get a 70 in. And I look at them, I'm like, you're smart. You're doing very well in this class that nobody else is, yet this class that everybody else has an A in, you're failing it with a 45.
Oh, yeah.
How?
Yeah, and I remember having kids who literally would be like, is it okay if I don't show my work? And I was like, as long as I know what you're doing. And, like, they would come up to me and be like, I did this, and that's it. And I go, and you didn't write any of those steps? He's like, nah. And the kid was bright.
Right.
He was, like, barely passing my class, and I'd be like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
And I feel like there's a lot of them out there who do that.
There are a lot. It drives me crazy. Although I will tell kids, I say, well, you know, especially in the COTOT situation, I go, I can move you up or down. You got to prove it. I just need something. And they usually, that falls flat.
Yeah.
It doesn't go anywhere at all.
All right. And how about, let's kind of move into the opposite world here. How about like the kid who might not be the brightest, but is so personable that he just does well?
A used car salesman, perhaps?
Yeah, similar to that, where it's like, you know, they kind of know what's going on, and they're doing enough to kind of get by, but they're so personable to you that you're like, at the end of the year, you're like, could I fail this kid? Like, I don't know if I can.
I know.
They're just so personable and so nice, and have a good idea of kind of what's going on.
They're like, what if, I know I failed this, but what if I redo half the assignment and you give me full credit? And if maybe you could buy this iPad that I've got in my backpack.
Yeah, and then you're like, is this iPad one of the school's iPad? And I'm like, No.
They don't own it anymore. I scratched off the label. And listen, you would look better in it than I do. I mean, you need this iPad. It's easier for grading. And they're like, and you're sitting there going, oh, yeah, that would be easier for grading. I could just walk around the classroom with an iPad.
Listen, I've bought some cars and had some negotiations that were, you know, easier than some of the used car salesmen that I've had in class.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh gosh, it sounds like a good deal. And then you're like, wait, are they pulling a fast one on me?
They do, and they love it. They thrive. And I sometimes those kids, you know, I like to talk about future goals and careers with them, and sometimes I call them out. I'm like, you know what I think you should go into? And they're like, ah, what? Because they're like, I'm going to go work at a fast food joint because that's all I care about. I go, you should go into sales.
100%.
And they're like, what? I go, I could see you selling cell phones or something like that. Maybe even pagers to somebody who doesn't need one.
Yeah. And I remember we had a few of those that we literally had those conversations with where it's like, you're really like selling yourself short here. Like,
yeah.
You have a talent.
They do. And you know, the classic thing is they, you know, they compliment something up. Oh, hey, you know, Mr. Hematics, nice shoes. And you're like, oh, these old things.
Yeah. You're like, I think George Washington wore these. I mean, yeah. Are you sure these are nice?
Oh, I love those. Those are so in style. And you're like, I like this guy.
Yeah. And they compliment you so often that you're like, maybe I do have it today.
Oh, yeah. You're like, well, maybe. Did you get a haircut? Because you look good.
Yeah, but they're so personal and they notice those slight things. I remember, like, it's like, yeah, you got a haircut. How did you know? Like, I walked by my wife and she didn't know, and you recognize this? And it's like, yes, I did.
I'll joke with those kids flat out and be like, you get an A for the day. I'm not grading anything today, but you're going to get an A for it.
Yeah. I didn't. They're some of my favorite students because they're students that I don't worry about when they leave school. You know they'll do
well.
They'll
land somewhere multiple times until they find the right place.
Yeah, because they have it. They have the it factor to make it through.
I don't have the it factor. I need that.
I think we both do.
Sell cars.
We just got to be more personable.
I'll make more money that way. I think selling cars would be a lot of fun.
It would be.
As long as, you know,
for you especially.
Oh, I love cars, but it'd be the quota thing that would probably drive me bonkers. And they'd be like, so I know you did this much last month, but I'm going to need you to make that high. I'm like, there's only so many cars you can sell on the lot. Yeah, I'm running the numbers.
You're too practical. They'd be like, well, I'm not going to do it, so why should I try?
I hate that. That eats me up inside. That's exactly how I would think.
So I'm going to take it that you weren't the overachiever?
You know, I was, and then I wasn't. High school hit, and I went from being the elementary overachiever and the teacher's pet.
Oh, we're going to lump two things. Yeah. That
was me. I was totally the overachiever and the teacher's pet. It's third grade totally peaked. And by the time I got to high school, I was like, I don't need to. This is fine. I mean, what is this going to do? This is going to do nothing.
You're like, I had one teacher who loved me.
I had multiple teachers who loved me. And then I got older, and I was like, this doesn't actually get me anywhere. That's so sad, isn't it?
See, I kind of agree with you. I had tendencies of an overachiever where I would do all my work and then make sure it was very thorough and all that stuff. If there was extra credit, I did it just because it was like, well, I might as well do this as well, seeing I already got the other stuff done. So I do identify with the overachiever a little bit.
I do too, yeah.
But my parents had a lot of high standards. And I
agree. High standards are it. So if you're a parent who's listening and you're not a teacher because you're bored and I don't know why you're listening to this, probably looking to fire me. But if you could do exactly that, hold high standards for your children, they'll become overachievers.
Yeah, because like I would be that kid who'd be like, I got a 95 on this test. And my mom.
Why is that not 100?
Yeah, my mom was like, what happened to those 5 points? And I was like, well, other kids. And she'd be like, I don't care about other kids. If they jumped off a bridge, would you?
You're like, maybe.
I was like, would it make me cool for a day? Might do it.
Yep. I mean, even my own children, we do the whole hold them to a high standard thing. They get a 95. They're like, I got a 95. They're so proud of it. And I'm like, bring them down. And my wife's like, stop that. I go, well, it's not perfect. There's always room for growth. And I had a teacher who would never give me a 100, ever. Things would be perfect. And I called him out on it. And I said, hey, this is perfect. He's like, there's always room for growth. I was like, ah!
It's funny. I'm having the realization that you and I are both perfectionists about stuff.
Certain things. Yeah, there's perfectionist tendencies with me.
And me as well. Like, mm-hmm. There's certain things that I'm like, this has to be perfect for me to give my seal of approval on it. And it's probably because of the high standards. So it's kind of like, you know, is it good? Is it not good? Because there is that double-edged sword where it's like too high of standards that kids are never going to create or achieve. Then you're setting up for failure. But I do agree there's always room for growth.
Yes.
And that's why when we talk about admin and evaluations, like sometimes I might peek at what they had to say because I'm like, oh, there are probably areas that I could improve on.
I like to look to see what they think is crap.
Yeah.
So that I go, and if I look at it and go, yeah, that was crap.
Well, being
then I'll be okay with it. But if I look at that and I go, what? That was the best.
Yeah, well,
they don't know what they're talking about.
But being perfectionists, we recognize what's crap in our classroom.
Yes.
While it's happening, we're like, that was a bust. I remember so many conversations we had where it was like, yeah, so maybe next class we don't do this and do something else.
Yes. But that's good co-teaching. Yeah. It is great you know, you have to build, you have to grow, you have to analyze yourselves. I mean, we do it with everything.
Oh, yeah. The self-reflection is definitely important. And I assume that most overachievers are doing that. Yeah.
I just, for me personally, I hate the actual draw to the self-reflection, like, please write a self-reflection. Like, oh, God, no, I don't want to. I've already thought about it. I've already beat myself up over it. Now you want me to write it down? Get out of here.
I mean, as a math teacher, writing anything down, I'm like, oh, gosh.
Yeah.
But going back to the overachiever, right, you got to, there's also the almost extreme where it's like, you have the student comes up and they're like, I got a 95. Mr. Hermatics, you must have marked something wrong that wasn't wrong. And you're like, hold on, hold on.
Well,
and I've yes. literally done it where it's like, let me look through this again. And you know what? I find a mistake I miss. And I'm like, huh, this 95 is now a 92.
Ooh, see, usually it's the other way around. I'm like, ooh, I made a mistake on my key. You were right.
But you get those, like, sometimes, like being an overachiever, I understand it and I get it. But there are some times where I'm like, you're just, like, too over the top here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Where you get the emails about every assignment, and you're like, oh, gosh, it's this
email again. I squash that right away.
I try to, too, but at the mm-hmm. same time, it's like, I empathize, and I go, I've been there.
Yeah, I do the empathy thing, but then I go, I don't want any more emails. Please stop.
All right, since we're talking about it, yeah, and since we're talking about achieving and stuff, let's talk about two edges of the coin here. We have the book smart, who's like actually has street smart, and mm-hmm. like you go, oh yeah, they're going to be successful. But then you have the book smart with no common sense.
Oh yeah, so I hope that my own son never listens to this.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
He was asking me about it today. He's like, oh, so, Dad, you guys are recording your podcast today? And I was like, yeah, we are. And I go, yep, yeah, Mr. Hermatics is coming over. And he's like, oh. And so he comes down while I'm setting up, putting the table and everything out for us. He goes, oh, what's it called? And I'm like, obviously it's the blackboardofbrokendreams.com, which I did not say to him because I don't want him to know. And then he's like, what's your name? Do you use a different name on there? I'm like, I do, because we don't want anyone to know that where we're from or whatever. And I go, well, this is our ego. This is our alias. We're popular. We're not popular. Like, three people are listening to this.
In our dreams, right?
Yeah.
We're trying to be those billionaires that your son's going to be.
Yeah. Gosh darn fortune teller thing. He's probably going to be rich. Hope he gives some to his parents. Anyway, I totally forgot where I was going with. No, I don't remember. He is the book smart with no common sense.
Come on.
No, it's true.
You're trying to raise an overachiever?
Yeah, and I failed on the common sense side.
I'm sorry to hear that.
I don't know who it drives crazy. Us crazy. My wife or myself. Because we're bad parents.
I think you're good parents.
Write that down. And I think, you know, we're doing fine. We're doing what we can. But, you know, it's the firstborn. Everything's got to be perfect. And this kid is just oblivious to the world around him.
I'm sorry. Do you shelter him too much?
Yes.
Fair enough.
We're like, no, put you in a bubble and keep you safe. And then he does something. I'm like, why did you do that? How did you not know? He's like, I haven't had any real world experiences yet. And I'm like, you're right.
Yeah, the book smart.
But that's
with
him.
Yeah, with no common sense. Like, oh, gosh, I have a special place for them because I'm like, oh, gosh, you're really smart and you do well with books and knowing what to study and all that stuff. But, gosh, I worry what the world's going to do to you because it's going to chew you up and spit you out.
It is. And, you know, once you realize that as a teacher, I try so hard after harping on them for their, I don't want to use the phrase dumb blonde, but no common sense attributes there,
mm-hmm.
that you go, ah, you probably don't know that it's this way in the real world.
Yeah, it's a little, you know, naive aspect of, especially.
You can jaywalk when there's no cars around. Like that type of thing where they're going to tell you there's no crosswalk, you can't cross here because they're so black and white, they're book smart, they know everything, whatever.
I mean, you can't be mad that your son's a a rule follower.
No, I'm very happy that he's a rule follower. In fact, some of the stories I've heard, you know, the bus is the worst place. You're going to find that out. Your time will come. I guarantee it.
But that's why we don't recommend bus duty, just so you know.
Don't do bus duty. Do not volunteer for bus duty. And even if they pay you, please email us and let us know how much you're getting paid, because I'm going to go, that ain't enough.
You know who we need to talk to? A bus driver.
Oh.
We need to find a bus driver to talk to, because you know what? I hear horror stories from students on the bus.
I got a bus driver. Maybe I can convince them to come on.
Future episode, maybe.
But I will, you know, if there's enough interest in the bus driver, I got a bus driver I can reach out to.
I love it. It's like, I got a guy.
I got a guy. I got a guy.
Yeah, but the book smart with the street smart, I mean, I never worry about those students, because you know they're going to make it, because not only do they have the intelligence to, like, do what they need to do to get good grades and to do stuff, but they're also the ones who are like, you know, they have their ear to the ground a little bit, and they know what's going on.
They do.
And they know they can't be, like, flim-flammed or anything like that. They know what's happening.
You know, the other people who know what's happening, and I give the utmost respect to them, are my paraprofessionals.
Mm.
My teaching assistants in the classroom, they know all the idiosyncrasies of every single child. They will tell you who's the book smart, who's the overachiever, who's the book smart with no common sense, who's got the street smarts, based off of where they were raised and et cetera, because they've been in classes with them for the last several years and you're getting them for the first time. They know them inside and out.
Oh, and the observation is key. And I mean, they do. I mean, the majority of their job is kind of like knowing what these kids need.
They're the best.
They are.
Underpaid.
100%. And we've talked about that before.
Oh, yeah.
And I can't say that enough, because it always, like, boggles my mind, because they're so important to classrooms and helping kids that... Why wouldn't you invest in that?
I won't even open that can of worms. We'll do that another time. Yeah, but holy cow, yeah. They're the best.
Can I talk about a stereotype that's really, you know, near and dear to my heart? The shy kid.
Oh.
Because I was that shy kid, too. I was an overachiever.
Oh, an overachiever. So you're the mix.
Yeah, I was an overachiever who did well and wanted to do well and all that stuff, wanted every, like, teachers to acknowledge that I was doing well, but I was also the kid who was, like, totally quiet.
Now, with the shy kid attributes, does perfectionist come with that? Is that a shy kid attribute?
I guess. I mean, maybe, because you don't want people to think, especially, like, when a question was asked of you, oh, gosh. Being the overachiever, I didn't want to answer the question wrong.
No.
And without notice, it was like, deer in the headlights, like, I think it's this. And then you'd hope it's the right answer, because being the shy kid, you don't want the attention, because if it's the wrong answer, mm-hmm. look out. But it's also, if it's the right answer, you better look out sometimes.
You don't want the glory either.
Yeah, you just want to be the real ghost of the classroom, where, like, as a teacher now, like, I will kind of focus on the shy kid.
Oh, I love finding the shy kid.
Because then it's
bringing,
like,
them out of their shell. That's my goal.
You try, and you know what? Some of my teachers were, like, one of the main reasons that I did come out of my shell, because they would, like, talk to me and try to get me to have conversations and stuff like that. And now, because I work in a job, and we've talked about it in one of our previous episodes, where I was like, I didn't think I could talk in front of people.
Right. I'm with you that, you know, standing in front of people can be a challenge for many people.
Yeah, and I was a kid who, like, grew long hair to kind of, like, hide behind the long hair.
I had long hair, too. Yeah. It was all the rage then.
Were you shy?
I was.
Oh, okay. So.
And then something changed. I think for me it was college.
See, for me it was, like, my junior, senior year of high school, where I had teachers that really, like, saw me for who I was.
Well, I had those, too, but, I mean, the flip, I think, was college.
You had to be social?
Yeah.
You were forced out of your shell? Like a hermit crab?
I think booze helped, honestly.
Maybe.
Personally, yes, it was totally booze.
See, for me, it was teachers, and that's one reason why I'm teaching today. It's like, I like to pick on, like, see the shy kid, and then, like, try to have those one-on-one conversations, like, when I'm checking on their work and
right.
stuff. And so it's not, like, in front of the whole class, because you don't want to call them out, because I've been there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not one of those teachers who cold call kids, because I acknowledge the shy kid.
So I like the cold call.
I know you do. And we've had that conversation where I was like, if I was that student, I'd be like, I'm dead right now.
So I've gotten a little bit, I'll say a little bit, very, very small amount better. I still cold call, especially, you know, as a special education teacher, you don't have a lot of kids in a classroom. You got to call in everybody. It's not like I got a class of 30 special ed kids, because if I did, I'd probably quit. But so, you figure you got a small classroom. You know, I've had some really, really small classrooms at times over the years. And if you're not calling on everybody, it's like talking to the wall. I mean, we've talked to the wall, but then there's like talking to the wall with three people.
Yeah, I've had a three-person class.
Horrible.
One time I had three people.
Yeah.
And there was one student who talked to me. And the other two were like, no.
I don't have to do anything. That other person's going to do it. So now what I do is I will give them the preemptive. I'll be like, hey, Matt, I'm going to be calling on you for the next question. Here's the question. You know, and sometimes I have a longer lead up, and sometimes my lead up is exactly that, five seconds max.
Yeah. And
that's helped.
I try to do that as well, because I know being shy, a lot of anxiety comes with that too. So it's nice to have the heads up to be like, hey, this is why. Calling on you next, so get ready.
And I try to set them up for success.
You try to give them a layup?
I give them the layup. I literally pass them the ball and give them the answer. And I'm like, I will point to the board, and I'll be like, all right, what number is this? And I'm like literally pointing to it on the board with my finger and circling it. And they're like, it's five. I'm like, you're right. You got it. Build that confidence early so they can ask more challenging questions later, like, you know, solve this, even though you should have already solved it. Solved, it's on your paper.
Yeah, I like that. You give them the layup and lower the hoop at the same time.
Yeah. Pretty much just step over the bar, but don't trip on it, okay?
It's a good strategy. I like that. Now let's go into the opposite. So we talked about shy. How about the one student that just can't leave you alone? The stage five clinger.
Oh, gosh.
I know I've had them.
I had them, too. There was one year, I was early in my career, and they would ask to eat lunch in my room. They would bring their lunch up. I don't even think they would get lunch, and they would either get lunch or bring their lunch or something. They would eat lunch in my class, and they're like, "Can I eat lunch up here with you, Mr. Plan?" And then it turned into like all the life stories that I didn't want to hear or care about, whatever hobby. And, you know, you just sat there and you nodded and you smiled and you asked questions to, I don't know, make conversation. And you're like, oh, really? And what did you do next? And they just go on and on. And you're like, oh, my gosh, how did you manage that? You know, all these canned questions that we have developed as teachers. But the mistake was I asked those questions and they kept coming back.
Yeah, but again, it's one of those things like for the shy kid, I have a little spot for the Sage 5 Clinger too, because
they need somebody.
Yeah, they just need to have that conversation.
Find somebody else.
Yeah, and like I hate to say it, out of, you know, the 15 years or whatever I've been teaching, the Stage 5 Clingers are the ones that like come back after they graduate and stuff. Just to see how you're doing.
They
and stuff.
Do, yeah. They reach out. They've gotten I've had the emails post leaving school, mm-hmm. and couple kids who found you on the Face Space or whatever, and I don't accept them.
It's tough, but it's tough because they just like talk to you, and you're like trying to do a lesson. You're like, I planned this lesson. It's going to be the best lesson ever, and it's like, Mr. Hematix, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? And it's like, oh gosh, they're trying real hard to like conversate with me right now, and I have, you know, a bunch of other kids that have to listen. So,
yeah, like, what so do tell I do? Me, how's your dog doing? Is your dog doing good? What about the kids? What about you? Where'd you go this weekend? What'd you do? And I'm like, we're not doing this now. Oh, I like cars. Oh, let me talk about cars. You got me.
And then when you shut them down sometimes, you're like, ooh, was that too harsh? Yeah. I don't know if that was too harsh.
I don't want to call them a stage five Klingon, but a definitely lower stage, and just will tell me about everything and anything that they're working on. They're like their scooter and their lawnmower and the video games, and you know, to the point where he's like, you're a gamer, can you test this game for me? I don't have, you know, whatever. I'm like, yep.
Yeah. Like, I'll bring it back. I'll be right. I'll give it back to you tomorrow. Blah, blah, blah. I'll let you know what it were, if it works or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, they've got me figured out. Certain buzzwords just set me off and I'm done.
Yeah, it's because they know you so well. Because of all the conversating that you do with them.
Too much. I believe in building a rapport with the children to an extent and then cutting it off. I got the car kids. I got the video game kids. I've got the kids who are like, oh, he's mechanical. Let's talk about mechanically related things and whatever else. You know, being after doing this for a while and being around for a few decades here, you've done a few things and you can hold a conversation.
Yeah, and I feel like we're both the people who want to be like someone to everybody. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
well, we just, there's a few people I could do without.
But. Well, yeah, and we've both encountered those where it's like, I'll pretend you don't exist after this year, but
I'm going to forget your name as soon as I walk out the door.
Yeah, but I feel like when it's someone that you know has good intentions and stuff, like you want to be there for them, right?
Correct.
So it's part of teaching, right? You want to try to reach everybody, and that's why you have so many different realms that you have to work with.
Have you ever been asked why you care so much?
Yes, I've
been. What was your response?
And I go, because it's my job.
Well, yeah, I say something along the same lines. Like, I get paid more for caring.
Yeah. I might use that because I like that.
The more I care, the more I get paid.
Because you know students will be like, really?
Yeah, they do. And then I'm like, no, stop. I get paid the same regardless.
Yeah.
Well, I'm an idiot. I chose this profession. Now I care. Sorry.
And you have to care about everybody. And like, we're going to, you know, talk about other students, right? And how about, we've been talking about intelligence a lot.
Yeah.
How about the kid who really like puts in all the effort? And, like, we'll check in with you all the time and everything else like that. But, unfortunately, just still can't do it.
They bombed.
Yeah, they bombed.
Like, they failed. They flunked.
Yeah, but they come up to, like, yeah, I really crushed it on that last test.
I hate that when that happens. I've had a few kids, you know what, I've had the tryhards, right? So I've had the tryhards who do so well in all the, you know, the impromptu questions during the lessons, and they're answering them. You're calling on them because they get it. You give them the worksheet. They check in with you. They get it. And then you're like, wow, they know it. And then they take the test.
Yeah.
They fail.
And it happens all the time. We've had so many students that have done that, where they do every assignment, every extra credit, and you look at their grade, you're like, it's a 50. What do we do?
What happened? What do you do? I'll tell you what I do, but what do you do?
It depends. I try to give him more extra credit if I can, but it's like, what do you do in that realm? Like, it's hard to figure it out sometimes. Like, I hate the end of the year when you have a kid who stayed for extra help, did every assignment, worked real hard. It's like, what do you do for that kid?
If that kid actually fails for the year, but they put that effort in, I pass him.
Yeah, and we've had those conversations. But it depends on how, for me, it kind of depends on how close they are.
It does.
If they have a 30, what do you do? I can't be like, yeah, well, here's 60 points.
No. So I've had these conversations with students. I said, listen, you're on the edge. And I go, what you need to have happen for the last month or two of school is you want a positive memory of yourself in those teachers' eyes. And they're like, what? I go, hear me out. Let's just say you're failing, because you are, but you get real close because you put all this effort in and you get it, I don't know, whatever your passing grade is. Let's say it's a 60. Let's say they get to a 58, 59, or a 65. They get to like a 62, 63, 64. So they get within a few points of passing. I go, you want that positive memory so that the teacher goes, oh, wow, they tried really hard there. I'm going to pass them. Versus being the expletive word that they were. And I'm going to go, fail, don't care. I don't care at all. Because if that's how I remember you, I definitely don't care.
I think that's great advice.
I tell them that. I go, be kind. They're, you know, because they will bump it up. They won't bump you down, but they will bump you up.
I mean, I'm sure there's teachers out there who bump people down where it's like, oh, yeah, you worked real hard and you got that passing grade, but you were still so rude to me. 59, 64.
Like, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
you failed by 1 point. And you know when you see a kid, like when guidance counselors are looking at grades and like, you failed by 1 point. How did you manage that? That's because they were a jerk and didn't earn it.
Yeah.
They're like, yeah, no, I'm definitely going to fail them up by 1 point. You can go to summer school.
Yeah.
you know, if it's offered.
Are we too nice sometimes?
Maybe. So here's what I do. I took this out of a professor of mine from college, and I've probably said this story before. I feel like I've been saying this story a lot in many different settings. I had a Chinese professor when I was in college. I was taking Chinese, and we would take a test, and you'd bring the test to the professor, and she would look at it. She'd look the whole thing over right there in front of you. She wouldn't let you sit down. She'd look at it. She'd scour it, and she'd be like, this is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong. You need to fix it and send you back to your seat. And you're like, I was just going to turn it in. And so you'd go back to your seat, and you'd fix a couple things, and then you'd bring it back there, and she'd look it over. She wouldn't actually let you turn it in until it met her satisfaction. I remember having like a B on a test, and she wouldn't take it. I was like, I'm good. She's like, no, fix this, you can do this, and pushed you until it met what they thought you could do, and I do that. So if I get a kid like that, the try hard who fails, I go, come here, you did this wrong, can you fix this, go back, take a look at this, and I send them back, and then they take it back to their desk, and then they come back, and they do it again. I look at it, and I go, bah, not quite. Send them back. They come back. I go, bah, you're getting closer. And I send it back so many times until I get what I want.
See, it's funny. I had an English teacher in high school who was very similar to that, where we would write essays. And I don't know why, but, you know, maybe being a math person, English, knowing where to put commas was always the hardest for me. And I would write essays, and I would turn them in, and he would regrade it and be like, your commas are all wrong. And I would go through it again like 40 times if I had to, because he would give it back to me that many times where he wouldn't grade it until my commas were perfect.
Ugh.
And then he would grade it. But you know what? To this day, I still have his voice in my head when I'm putting commas in places, because like he was so strict about that.
Oh, yeah.
And I appreciated it because he could have just been like, I didn't, like, your grammar was wrong. This is what you're going to get. But, like, he wanted me to be successful in English.
Right, because how many kids are actually going to go back and read the comments? They're going to look at the grade. Some may read the comments, but they're not going to make the change.
Yeah.
And that teacher and my Chinese professor made us make the change. And that's a successful teacher.
Yeah. Because, like,
we probably hated them at the time.
See, and, like, I didn't hate him at the time because I knew he was trying to make me, again, we talk about room for improvement. Like, I knew I could improve, and I attribute a lot of my success in English and writing later on in life because, like, when I went to college, like, I had a professor who was like, hey, like, we have this, like, you know, writing crew that I want you to be part of.
Oh.
Especially being a math teacher, like, it'd be great to have you as someone we can reference and stuff like that. And I was like, oh, you know, I really appreciate the offer, but, like, I don't have time for that. You know what I mean? Like, I'm a teacher. What do you think? I have time for this on top of grading all my papers?
Yeah. They're like, of course.
But I attribute it to that teacher because he made me strive to be better.
Yeah. That's key. That's a good strategy there. All right.
Opposite realm with the, if we're talking about tryhards, right, we got to talk about the student who does absolutely nothing.
Who are they? Where are they? Yeah, are they here?
The zero percenter.
The zero percenter. They're nothing.
Where they just were like, do you do anything in this classroom?
Did you just get an email asking how they're doing? You're like, oh, they're here?
and you see the 0% in the grade book, you're like, oh.
Crap, I knew I should have made a phone call or an email 3 months ago.
Yeah, but, like, because they don't turn any papers in, you're like, especially for me, like, for me, knowing kids' names, it's all in the passing back of papers.
Right, yeah.
Where, like, I know the first couple weeks of school when I pass papers back, I look them in the eye every time and I go, I'm not trying to be creepy, I just need your face to match your name.
That's your line. Hey, not being creepy, I'm going to stare you down for a minute and say your name 13 times in my head.
Yeah, anybody who's had me will be like, he's definitely said that before. You know what I mean? Like, that's the line that I give every year at the beginning of the year. I go, I'm trying to get your name, And I do everything alphabetically at first because it's the easiest way to learn names and pass papers
back.
Oh,
it's the greatest excuse in the world for a seating chart.
Oh, 100%.
I'm horrible at names. I'm going to put you in rows by name.
Yeah. So because of that, I need to know. So when you don't hand any papers, I'm literally like, walk right past that kid. And then I'm so focused on learning the names that I don't realize I just passed somebody.
They probably fall in a couple other categories, like either shy or stoner or whatever. And maybe they're just like flying under the radar.
Yeah.
So good. How do they do it?
I don't know. And like, how do you make it through the day just staring at the wall?
How'd you make it to high school?
I don't know. But like, that's a real like concern. And like every year I have one or two kids that are the 0%er.
As soon as I get the email asking how they're doing, I'm like, oh, I should probably touch base with that kid a few more times than I have in the past. You know, a few times zero is still zero, so we're good.
And sometimes it's like 6%. Yes!
Yeah. Hey, I want you to know they did a thing and their grade went up. What is it? 6.
Yeah, room for improvement though, right?
That's it. And we have made progress. That's a substantial gain if you want to look at it that way.
Yeah, but like, every year it boggles my mind that a student will show up to school and do nothing. And then when you ask them, because I've had these conversations multiple times, it's like, are you going to do something? And it's like, nah.
They don't even say anything. They just shake their head. They're like, mm-mm.
Oh, we've had to shake the head and just put it right back on the desk.
Put it head down. And I'm like, all right, well, you're not disrupting. And I got 29 other kids to worry about. So thank you for not being a nuisance.
Yeah. Easy paper to grade.
Yeah, I go, that's what I tell them. I go, zeros are really easy. Thanks for making my job better.
Yeah, but it's tough, like, to see that happen.
Yeah.
Especially as the overachiever in me. It's like,
you're literally... Well, the overachiever in us is harping on that kid. Come on, please do something. Please.
Yeah, but after, you know, half a year or whatever, you can't keep begging somebody to do something.
No, that's the point of no return.
Yeah, it's tough.
Oh, gosh, what about the... You've seen these kids. They're wearing khakis. They're wearing a cardigan. They're the old soul.
The old soul. Born in the wrong generation.
Born in the wrong generation. We watch the decades change the longer we've been teaching. You know, kids are like, I wish I was born in the 90s, which is like every Gen Z kid right now.
Yeah, and you have kids who, like, the old soul is always like, I love big band, Frank Sinatra.
I've had those. I had another one this past year. And, you know, because one of the icebreaker questions, and I do this for my own selfishness, is to know what the kids are listening to, just to stay up with the modern times. Of course, I changed jobs, and nobody is listening to anything modern. They're all listening to, like, 80s and 90s music. And then I had one kid who was like, Kansas. And I was like, oh, no. I was like, you're the old soul of the group. And he was just listing off all these old bands. And I was like, wow, yeah, okay. And, you know, they always make the comments, too, about, I wish I was living in such and such decade.
Yeah, and they have the hairstyle and all that stuff. Do you think they have a backpack?
Or
maybe like a briefcase? A briefcase. Satchel?
A satchel or a briefcase. 100%. 100%. Yeah, that's... We respond, we're probably thinking the same kid.
Yeah, and sometimes the old soul ends up being the stage 5 clinger where they come up, they're like, I can't relate to the kids in this class.
Well, yeah, they have better conversations with
adults,
their peers, yeah,
yeah.
The adults. And when I feel like I remember that. I mean, I remember having better conversations with adults than peers.
Yeah.
For a long time, especially younger, just because... You know, they probably have a sense of maturity about them, and they're viewing as everybody else is immature, and they're not immature, even though they probably are. But that's what those are the conversations they want to have, but even them, they're awkward.
Yeah, they want to talk about real issues.
I don't.
Neither do I. So it's like, you know, you have that kid who's definitely more mature than everyone else in the room, and it's, they look at all the students around them, and they're like, oh, gosh. So I get it. The old soul is definitely, it doesn't happen as much.
I don't see it as much as I used to.
No, but you do see it every now and then. I know there's a student in my school who definitely I would consider as the old soul.
Oh, that's good.
He's not in my classes at all, but you see him in the hallways and you're like, oh, this kid, he knows how to dress. He's got a cool hairstyle. And he's the old soul.
I remember seeing a kid looked like he was straight out of the 80s. Like, hair band, in the 80s, big hair, and his girlfriend was also, like, 80s hair band, big hair, hairspray, jackets.
It's funny that they found each other.
I'm impressed.
So, we're talking about people finding each other and stuff, and we're talked about some stereotypes with jocks and stuff. How about the high school sweethearts?
That's them.
They're
high school sweethearts, but, like, they're meant to be together. But then there's the high school sweethearts who just, you know, you watch it all publicly fold in and fold out.
Yeah, but it's kind of crazy because high school sweethearts, I feel like most teachers, if they know kids have been together, like, freshman year, sophomore year, junior year, senior year, I'm sure a lot of teachers are like, I wonder if they're still together.
Yeah, I do wonder that. Now, the high school sweetheart thing, that's probably, it happens. Like, my brother married his high school sweetheart.
Okay.
But I don't hear about it. And older generation, my wife's parents in their generation, so, they were in high school in the 70s and 80s. They were marrying high school sweethearts,
yeah.
I guess.
It's funny because I've had students that I've seen recently who are still, they were in my, I don't know if it was pre-calculus or calculus. They were in one of my classes where they started dating in my class. And it was, big news. Everybody talked about it. And they're still together. And, have a kid and stuff now or married. Oh, wow. It's like, whoa. Well,
good for them.
And I'm like, good for them. They made it. They're the high school sweethearts who made it.
Yeah, they do. They make it. But it's always fun watching the plane crash and burn.
Oh, yeah. I've seen a few weeks ago, I saw a breakup, really brutal in the hallway.
Oh, gosh.
And it was like, are we done? And it was like, yeah, we're done. And I was like, oh. And another teacher was there, and I was like, oh, how tragic. And you know what happened? Within, 40, 50 minutes or whatever time passed between periods or whatever, I saw them in the hallway.
They were back together, holding hands. Were there people in the hallway clapping?
No, so you know what I did?
What did you
do? The teacher that witnessed it with me, I called him right up. I was like, believe what happened. And he's like, shut up. And then he was like, you know what? I think I just saw them walk by my room. And it was like this big conversation, but it's always funny for the high school dynamics there.
Oh, gosh, yeah. I don't know about you, but I had a high school sweetheart. She's married with kids and had twins. That could have been me.
Gosh, twins. Oof. That must be tough. I have two kids, but not the same age.
Yeah, me too, but so I'm like, oh my gosh. That's, I know, and to the people listening who have twins, congratulations.
Yeah, yeah. And I have a lot of, I don't envy your position, but I have a lot.
Better you than me.
Yeah, I support you a lot here, and I go, good for you, and I just don't know how you did it. Yeah. Oh, gosh. But talking about hallways, how about you have the kids that you've had in the past who just are always in the hallway, and you call them, they just pop in your class all the time. And you're just like, oh, gosh.
Gosh darn popping.
The popping. As an adult, and, I remember back in the day, people would just come over your house and pop in, right?
The popping.
It happened all the time. But,
I think they did an episode about that on Seinfeld.
Yeah, I think they did, yeah. But it's...
Or Friends or something, I don't know.
Yeah, but it was a very common thing,
yeah,
right?
You just popped in, hey?
Yeah, but, when cell phones were invented, popping didn't...
Can't do the popping anymore. Can I come over?
Yeah.
A little text message.
Yeah. So it's it was always interesting to me. And then, became a teacher and the pop-in still happens.
They pop in all the time, so it's a matter of do you keep your door locked? I know some places you have to keep your door locked and you're supposed to keep your door locked, but you don't because then you got to let the kid in every time they use the bathroom or whatever, whatever security protocols are at your building. A scene, but then you leave your door wide open, and I didn't mind having my door wide open when we could. I was like, I'll leave it open. It doesn't matter. And Then kids started popping in. Hey, oh, yeah. How are you, Mr. Plant? I'm just here. Hey, by the way, kids, you know, the answer is this. And they're, like, telling everybody the answer. And, like, saying, they aren't saying kids. They're like, what's up, fam? You know, I'm like, get out.
Yeah, it's always the kid, too, who, like, gave you a hard time when you had them in class.
So, yes.
And they're like, I hate you. Why do I need to be here? And then they keep showing up, and you're like, oh, gosh.
You hated being here in class. In fact, you skipped my class. Why are you here now?
Yeah. Well, they're probably skipping another class.
Go back to class. I see them coming, and I'm like, get out. Get out.
Yeah.
Don't come in here.
I always use the line, I'm like, we don't take in strays here, okay? Like, get out. Get out.
Then you got the pop-in that's in there for not you, but for their high school sweetheart.
Oh, yeah.
No, get out. And they're like, I need a hug. No, ew, blah, no PDAs in here. Blah.
Yeah, not a fan of that, you know? But it's always interesting to have that pop-in kid.
Ah, gosh, there's so many different personalities that pop in, too. Stoners don't pop in. Jocks sometimes pop in.
Yep.
No, stoners pop in. But that's usually because they're, like, looking for something. One of their friends, hey, I got to go to the bathroom. You want to meet me in the bathroom? You want to go to the bathroom? I need to meet me in the bathroom. Got a vape pen? I need a vape pen. Kyle's is in Lost and Found.
Yeah, I think that's where it went, right?
Yeah.
Do you think he's going to come and retrieve it?
Probably.
Yeah, it's tough, though. Like, the pop-in, because you always, it's one of those things. Like, you don't want to be rude to the kid because you don't, like, you know, maybe they just need the attention today, you know? But also, I also don't want them coming back and being like, I was in Mr. Hematic's class. You can call him. He'll verify I was there.
Yeah. And then I call him like, oh, that reminds me. Speaking of popping kids, I have a kid who pops in everywhere. He pops into mine. I yell at him, get out. He showed up late to my class this year. And I said, you're late. You need to go get a pass. He's like, all right, I'll go get a pass. So he went and got a pass from a teacher he doesn't even have. And they're like, I don't remember what the hall pass said, but it was something like, he doesn't even belong here. Like, get him out. Like, of course, he's carrying this in with a shit-eating grin. Like,
oh, yeah.
A mile wide. Just, hey, look what I'm like, you got to pass. I'm not giving you detention because that means I have to spend more time with you.
And as we talked about before, that's a bad idea.
I don't want any more time with you.
Yeah, it's tough. With all these stereotypes, though, I mean, I don't know. Do we miss anything?
Well, the pop-in. Oh, the Perseverator.
Oh, the Perseverator.
I have only had two or three of them over the course of, 14. I think I just finished year 14 of actual teaching, not to mention the para years. But two, maybe three Perseverators come to mind. They need so much help.
Yeah, and they worry about everything.
They have they have commitment issues.
Yeah. Is it A, B, C, or D? I don't know.
I'm going to need you to make up your mind. But what if it's wrong? It might be, and then you're going to get it wrong and need you to, like, I start to lose my patience, and then I have to remind myself, like, I've had one of these before, like, it's okay. The Perseverator has a hard time with commitment. They cannot commit to an answer. They talk themselves out of everything right and wrong multiple times. I don't know how they do it. It's amazing to me how they can actually do this. And I struggle in the beginning convincing them to do it. And I think I remember, you know, one of these kids, nicest guy ever, and would take 10,000 years to finish a very short test or quiz. You know, the entire class is done. They're having a hard time keeping it together for one kid. And, you know, you can move that kid, but, you know, you don't want to mess up their flow because you know it's going to take them forever to get back on task, and they just can't commit to it. And I go, just, you know, put down everything you know. And I'm like, you know, you make all these reassurances, like, well, if you fail, maybe we can do a retest. But I'm like, I don't got 3 hours to spend after school for 10 questions.
Yeah, I've had a few like that. I think we shared one of them at one point. Where I remember that now that you've mentioned the story, it's like, oh, yeah, I remember that student.
He sat on the edge by the window.
Oh, yeah.
Nicest guy.
Yeah, super nice kid. And you know what? Anytime extra help was needed, Mr. Plant was doing it.
I was there, you know, convincing him, just put it down. I'm going to put it down for you. Yeah. And I had another one this past year, and unfortunately for him, he tanked. I'm hoping his grade was so good that he was fine, but he tanked the end of the year hard and started beating themselves up over it and just stopped doing things. Went from perseverating and using ChatGPT to make plans, to get things done. Like, so meticulous. Spent so much time creating a plan on ChatGPT and then having ChatGPT reanalyze the plan. Then he sent it over some other AI thing to analyze it, and he showed me the whole thing. He's like, look, you can go through here, and it gave me a schedule and told me everything down to the minute. And he would come up to me, he goes, I have 17 minutes left to finish this. And I'm like, and then we'd have a conversation. He's like, well, now I only have, 8.5 minutes. And I'm just like, oh, gosh. And I'm smacking my head, and I'm like, okay. And then I go, it's a wash, and we just have kind of like a heart-to-heart. And I go, okay, where are we at? What are we doing? What's the plan? We just need to make a commitment. And he's telling me about all this ChatGPT, and I'm at the point where I'm like, I need you to just actually use ChatGPT to find the answers. So that you get it done. He's like, but then I'm not going to learn anything. And I'm like, you're the only kid in the world who has just told me that they want to learn something. And he's like, well, it's about the process. I enjoy learning. And I go, I appreciate that. I really value that you want to learn. However, this is 2 weeks late and you're going to fail. I just need it done for half credit. I don't care how you get it at this point, and neither do your teachers. They're like, well, they're going to fail me. I go, I'm not telling them. Are you telling them?
Yeah, and he loves the process, but then there's no process.
There was a process to do the process that never had the process actually done.
Yeah, but then if they ended up just getting a grade, they would have worried about that.
They did. They were like, well, this is not a real grade. This is not an honest grade. And then they were just going on about that. I'm like, oh, my gosh. And I go, and I felt bad for the guy. I figured at that point, now we're really dealing with some serious mental health issues. If we can't commit that, like, I've had the perseverators before, and we've always managed to move over the hurdle, and we just tanked it at the end of the year. And I'm hoping next year is a fresh year. And that person wanted to do all these AP classes and stuff, and I'm like, I can't in good faith recommend this. Yeah, I know you want them, and you probably could do them, but I can't get you to actually complete anything anymore because you're so far behind on commitment.
Yeah, and just for the mental health. And now I'm really interested to see what they decide for, like, food every day, like when they become an adult and they need to figure out what they're going to eat for dinner. Because I know for me,
he had dinner scheduled in his ChatGPT plan.
What a smart man. Because I know for me, that's like, as a grown adult, I think that's the hardest thing about it. It's like, what am I going to do for dinners this week?
Oh, my gosh. That's the same conversation my wife and I have all the time. I'm like, and then she'll put a menu together, and I'm like, well, I don't want turkey burgers today.
We make a menu, too. You have to.
I know I did that assignment with my students, and one kid did. I gave them a budget, and I said, you have to make sure you're shopping for yourself and a roommate, and you have to be able to feed yourself breakfast, dinner, and lunch for 2 weeks, and you're going, but you could go grocery shopping every week. That was the assignment within a budget. And they could go online and use the flyers and all that other stuff. One kid made chicken wings for dinner every day.
I mean, it's a good strategy.
And I said to him, you're eating chicken wings for dinner every day. He's like, I know. And guess what stereotype he falls into? Stoner.
There you go. Fair enough.
And he was like, chicken wings every day. And I'm like, okay. And I go, it's not that I have a problem with you eating chicken wings every day, because they are awesome. However, I am not a nutritionist, but I would question the nutritional value of chicken wings every day. And he said, I like chicken wings. And I said, fine. I go, well, now we have to calculate it out. You didn't buy enough chicken wings, and you bought one bottle of buffalo sauce for 2 weeks worth of chicken wings. I go, you don't have enough. I go, how many chicken wings do you eat in a day? He gives me his number, like 10, 12, or whatever. I go, you didn't buy enough. You're going to have to go back to the store. What are you going to do? You ran out. He's like, huh. And then he comes up with something else, like ramen.
I mean, cost effective.
It was cost effective. He was way under budget, and I said, that's fine. You achieved this, but remember, you have to buy double because you're feeding a roommate too. He's like, okay.
Did you ask what he did with the surplus of money?
No, I didn't want to go down that road. Maybe I should have asked. He's like, well, I'm going to be real hungry. I'm going to need some snacks, some Scooby snacks.
I'm so curious of what he would have said.
Oh, gosh, that kid, I'm surprised he made it.
Yeah, that's great. All right, we good?
I think we're good. I think we covered a lot of stereotypes, and obviously we missed some, so please chime in. Please send us a message and let us know what you want to hear about, and maybe we'll do a part three.
All right, perfect. All right, that's our lesson on the many, many characters who make schools functional-ish.
To our administrators, we see you, we hear you, and we're ignoring your walkthrough notes.
To our students, we love you, but please stop eating Takis during group presentations.
And to our fellow teachers, if you recognize someone in this episode, congrats, you're observant. If you recognized yourself, congrats, you're self-aware. And if you recognized everyone, congrats, you're the special ed teacher.
Subscribe and send to us your favorite stereotypes, or just rage listen in your car during your 22-minute commute to nowhere.
Because if you're still here, you either really love teaching or your district won't let you transfer. Thank you again for listening. You can find us at blackboardofbrokendreams.com. Whoa, yeah. Where the laughter's loud and the sarcasm streams. Oh,